This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
A warning, this episode contains explicit language. The movie Shortcomings is a tart comedy about a cynical cinephile with a lot of hangups. Ben hates his job and is emotionally checked out of his relationship with his longtime girlfriend. And when the couple goes on a hiatus, he's forced to confront unresolved insecurities tied to his Asian American identity. The movie is directed by Randall Park, and it has a lot to say about interracial dating and intraracial conflict. I'm Aisha Harris, and today we're talking about Shortcomings on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu. Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
In this country, some truths aren't self-evident. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as wide-ranging and real as the people who tell them, we celebrate the Black experience for all its soul and richness. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get podcasts.
Joining me today is writer Kat Chow. Welcome back, Kat.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Great to have you. Also joining us is writer and critic Walter Chow. Welcome back to you too, Walter.
Hi, I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah.
Ooh, two Chows, different spellings.
I know. So we have two Chows today. So in Shortcomings, Justin H. Min plays Ben, a miserable dude who's at an impasse in life. So he's on the outs with his girlfriend, Miko, played by Ali Maki. And instead of pursuing his dream of being a filmmaker, he's managing a struggling indie movie theater in Berkeley, California. Now, when Miko announces she's moving to New York for a few months for an internship, they decide to take a break. And Ben finds himself suddenly and very awkwardly back out on the dating scene. Sherry Kolla plays Ben's punchy best friend, Alice, and Tavi Gevinson and Debbie Ryan appear as Ben's potential love interests, Autumn and Sasha. Adrian Tomina adapted the screenplay from his own graphic novel of the same name, and it's the directorial debut of actor Randall Park. Shortcomings is in theaters now. And we should also mention that we will be talking about some of the key moments throughout the film, maybe giving a little bit of the light spoilers, so be warned if you plan to watch later. So Kat, I want to start with you. What did you make of this film, especially considering that we're coming at a time where we're getting a lot more voices from Asian American filmmakers and actors on screen? You know, how does this feel for you in this moment that we're having?
I mean, in this moment, it was really neat just to see this more indie film with an Asian American cast, mostly grappling with Asian American issues that didn't have the normal beats of that immigrant story. So you have, you know, something related to family, something related to going home. And I'm not knocking those themes because I adore those also. And a lot of my book centers around that too. But it was refreshing to have that. And I sort of dug the unlikable, miserable characters, as you mentioned, Aisha.
Yeah, yeah. Ben is, he's a trip. He's a trip around the world and then some.
He's a trip. He's that friend where he sort of gets grandfathered into the friend group, but everyone is sort of like, Ben, like, you need to go to therapy. Ben, you're exhausting. I can only hang out with you in 1 hour increments, and I'm not going to go to a movie with you. Like, we just cannot engage.
Yes, we know those friends, and we all hope to not be that friend.
Yeah.
Walter, how about you? I read your review on Film Freak Central, and I learned so much from it, and I'm curious, can you elaborate more? Because I know you were not as into Shortcomings as maybe Kat and I were. So tell us how you feel.
Well, you know, I have a lot of issues with Ben, obviously. He's like the worst person I've seen in a movie for a long time. And I've been watching serial killer movies lately. So it's like, wow. I understand why his girlfriend moved to New York, because maybe she's a little bit afraid of him.
Yeah.
There's so much like invested in the film, more than the book even, where, you know, into making him this loner and this weirdo that can't connect to other people, that lacks empathy and lacks introspection. Even at the very end of the film, I thought, like, you know, there's this moment where a woman comes and asks if he's sitting by himself, and he's got this, you know, she's into me moment. Even after he's being humbled for the whole duration of our time with him, he still is this weird narcissist who believes that women actually are interested in him. And the movie kind of supports this idea that women are interested in him, or that anyone is interested in him. And I'm having trouble with it, because he seems to me to be so noxious.
Yeah.
And I wonder if my real, like, revulsion with him isn't a lot of self-loathing. Isn't like, God, I hope I'm not like that. Mm. Geez, everything that he is what I try to avoid being, but I fear that I am. And I wonder if the film is kind of just pinging on that for me. Like,
interesting.
Why am I having such a strong reaction about this guy? Well, I like movies like Ben Muzz, and there's a lot of aspects to Ben that make me uncomfortable about myself. And so there's a possibility that the reason I'm reacting so strongly against him is that if you're like me, I guess, you tend not to like people who are like you, or that reminds you of the things that you don't like about yourself. So
yeah,
I'm being introspective about this. The more that we see this kind of representation, I think to your question, Aisha, is that all of a sudden I'm exposed on the screen in a way that I never was before. These issues with my parents, these issues with, you know, generational trauma, all this stuff is like, wait a minute. I used to be able to just look at, you know, five different Chris's having existential problems when I go to the movies. Now I'm looking at a Walter having an existential problem. And, you know, I'm married to a white woman, happily married for 25 years, and we have two kids. And the movie is so much about, you know, this Ben really resents it when Asian women date white men, but he really wants to date white women. And, you know, these issues are raised. And for me, it's like, hey, is that me? Is that what happened here? Because I really love her. You know, the hardwiring is difficult to attack when I see it reflected on screen.
Yeah. So, I mean, to your point, Walter, about just kind of worrying about seeing yourself in this movie too, one of the things that I really appreciated was in Hua Su's New Yorker profile of Randall Park. And he talks to Ronnie Chang, who has this early scene in Shortcomings where he's basically doing a riff or a satirical intro of Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah, it's a movie within a movie.
A movie within a movie they're sort of poking fun at Crazy Rich Asians and the opulence and the capitalistic tendency. But Ronnie Chang, he's kind of grappling with the idea of how satirical is this movie, Shortcomings? What is the critique of it? But also about Ben's character. And there's a quote that really stuck with me, because when I'm thinking about likability in terms of these fictional characters, I'm like, how provocative is this? Does it matter that I like them or not? What is this making me think about? Mm-hmm. And of course, I mean, my tendency is to always be, you know, reasonably afraid or reasonably uncomfortable of incel or MR Asians, you know, men's rights Asian men who tend to have misogynistic tendencies and tend to often critique Asian American women. But the Ronnie Chang quote, I'd love to read it. It says, in the hands of a lesser director or lesser producer, this would become a weird incel, self-hating, Asian-hating Asian, Chang said, catching Park's eye. Thank God for the delicate hands of Mr. Park to come and thread that needle. And when I read that, I was wondering, I mean, did he thread that needle? And perhaps that's something we can discuss later.
Yeah.
But Aisha, I'm so curious to hear what you thought of this.
I mean, obviously, I'm not Asian American, but I found it really fascinating because, as I kind of hinted at earlier, I feel like we're in this interesting moment where the conversations that I've been seeing and observing amongst my Asian American friends, and also just reading about various conversations that have happened. There was like a New York Mag article a few years ago that came out about sort of diving into this very delicate issue around Asian American women, men and women, and their sort of conflicts about dating outside of their race, specifically dating white people more so than anything else. And so we're in this moment where we're seeing this representation kind of trickling into films now and TV, like Beef, the Stephen Young character. It's not really hammered home, but it pops up a few times where he clearly has issues with white women and Asian people dating white women, but also he's attracted to them in the similar way that Ben is. It also shows up in Joyride a little bit, where the characters, including Sherry Cola's character in that other movie, is ribbing the main character for never having dated an Asian guy. So, like, it's really interesting to me that we're having these conversations, because I think this is something that, at least in Black spaces, has popped up in movies and TV for forever and has shown up in ways that have been just as blunt, whether I think about something like Spike Lee's Jungle Fever. And so it was interesting to me to see it sort of, to me at least, and I have not seen every Asian American film that has ever been made, so perhaps this has come up before in the past, but noticing that it is kind of coming to the forefront now in a way is really interesting to me. And I think that's why, especially the conversation that is had between Ben, the Sherry Cola character, and then Sherry Cola's girlfriend, who shows up later in the film.
Loved her
yes.
so much.
Amazing.
So towards the, you know, last third of the film or so, there's a conversation that Ben has with Alice and Meredith, who's Alice's girlfriend, played by Sonoya Mizuno. And she's half white and half Asian, and he's kind of grilling her. And Ben, being a terrible person, says along the lines of, like, how do you feel about your mother possibly being a fetish for your white dad?
Yes. Which is a terrible thing to say. Terrible thing to say.
Yeah. I don't know. When you're asking Kat about, like, did Randall Park and, you know, the writer, Adrian Tomina, thread the needle, it seems like, Walter, maybe you don't think they did. And there is a quote from Randall Park where he did an interview with Washington Post around the time that the Sundance premiere happened, where he says, "I didn't want the movie to take a stance on anything. I just wanted these characters to take their stances on things." Mm-hmm. Do you feel as though that maybe is the issue for you, Walter? I mean, maybe there is a little bit of self-loathing there, but also, like, there's a difference between a movie and a filmmaker taking a clear stance and then the characters taking the stance. Is that maybe something that you are feeling, that sort of tension?
I guess a couple things there. Like, I really, that's my least favorite answer that a filmmaker gives when they're asked about what the movie's about. You're just not aware of the stand that you're taking when you say that you're not taking one. If you don't acknowledge what your point of view is, you're either being dishonest or you've lost control of what your point of view is. And I think ultimately, you know, the answer to the question of, does he thread the needle? For me, he didn't. I mean, there is self-loathing that wraps up in there that makes me dislike him, but he's also essentially dislikable. You know, the ones that I noted most, the changes from the novel to the film, are designed to make Ben more loathsome. Hmm. You know, the fight with the boyfriend on the street is very, very brief in the novel. In the film, it protracts. It allows Ben to say a few more terrible things, make terrible assumptions. You know, and they've really expanded on the Autumn character in the film. And it's to the detriment of everyone, I think. And, you know, I don't want things spelled out for me. I don't need that or desire it. I like obscure and strange films. All, you know, I like experimental movies. But this is a movie, I think, that lacks a real clear North Star. Are you offering Ben a second chance? Because at the end of the film, you know, Alice, who we, I love Sherry Cola.
Yeah,
I
she's
love Sherry all Cola the time. So much.
Amazing. So good. So good.
I loved seeing her in this role too, where she gets to be super desirable.
Yes.
And I totally see it. She can be a serial dater. I get it. She's a magnetic personality. And at the end of it, she offers a lifeline to Ben. There's no second chances offered in the book. You know, I'm not the guy that read the book and loved it for 20 years and came to the movie. I read the book yesterday because I knew I was going to be talking about the film. And the book just ends with ambiguity. Like, this is a guy at a crossroads who really has to begin to grapple with some of his demons if he ever wants to be something other than miserable and not alone. And in the film, it's like, you can be whatever you want to be, man. We got this amazing person who loves you and will offer you endless lifelines to, she's going to come out and we're going to drive back to New York together, and maybe you'll crash on the couch and it'll be the irascible weirdo that lives my, I was like, wait a minute, why is the redemption being offered to someone who's not really earned it? It seems scary to me, I guess, and not complete.
I mean, I saw that ending as more, you know, unclear and more open, where he is offered this sense of redemption, but that sense of redemption is not definite. Mm-hmm. Is he going to make the choice? Where I mean, I don't want to spoil the ending, but he is given a choice where it's that typical, you know, rom-com scene where the man tries to go pursue his lover, which, like, you know, that one last college try, so to speak, which in a lot of ways, if he had followed through with it, could read as a bit incel-y, where you're not truly listening to your ex's desires and you're not giving her the space she needs to be her own person. I mean, I think it leaves the viewer with the question of how far is he going to continue in this direction? How far is he going to continue to see women in general as people who have their own sense of agency that isn't related to him? And there is that sense of ambiguity where, Walter, you mentioned this airport scene where he sees a woman's attention as directed at him when it truly isn't. But I truly felt that this ending was at this crossroads where this is the type of man who is going to have to go through so much to interrogate himself and why he alienates so many people in his life. Yes, he has Sherry Cola as this loving friend, but he's also a complete asshole to her, blowing up her spot with this woman that she's in love with, needling in so many ways. And there's a scene where Meredith, the girlfriend of Sherry Cola's character, Alice, where Alice kind of makes apologies for Ben, saying, Meredith, I'm so sorry that you're meeting Ben at this point in his life. And Ben is like, no, I mean, I think you would hate me anyway.
Yeah.
And that sort of acknowledgement, there's a tension there where he's self-aware, right. But is he going to do anything about it? And that, to me, is the question that the movie ends on.
You know, I think that's a great point. I love that you mentioned the airport scene and the scene right before that where he does sort of the last chance, you know, the rom-com convention of you're riding a horse onto a bridge or whatever, you're going to go and do the last thing. It landed with me in a different way. When I was watching it, what I saw instead was a guy who had just had this really terrible, abusive argument with a clear ex, which he's throwing out all these accusations and being personally dismissive and horrible. And at the end of it, trying to manage the situation again, saying, look, this is just what we do. We just kind of get up in our feelings and then we just, come on, let's go through it. And she laughs at him and sort of is like, you know, I'm just so happy we never have to do this again. And I'm like, yeah, you go, girl. You are free.
Yeah.
And the very next scene, he's stalking her and he's watching her. And
it is creepy.
It's very creepy. Yeah. And I love that he makes the right choice by like just saying, God, what am I doing? I'm going to go to the airport. I'm going to go home. But then at the airport, there's that scene that we're talking about in which he again mistakes a woman's attention for him.
But I think progress isn't linear, right? And I think I do wonder if it would feel less true if all of a sudden it's very clear that this has only been a matter of a couple of days. It doesn't have a title screen where it's like 6 months later, you know? So it's like, I think it would have felt a little more false if she had been interested in him or if like he had just been like, you know, ignoring her in a way. I think that sort of, to me, is what makes this very flawed character at least feel real and messy because incels and all those adjacent like men, that it's not going to just take one catastrophic ending of a relationship for them to suddenly just realize, oh, I see the error in my ways now. I need to do better.
Right.
You're totally right. You know, I think it's absolutely authentic, but the way that it's going is doom and horror.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't feel empathy for him. At the end of the day, all of those complications about this character don't fit for me in sort of a, like Annie Hall. Say that Annie Hall was made today. What's the feeling that we have about that movie as opposed to when it was released in like 77, right? We know too much now about this character. We know too much about this kind of person. We know too much about the kind of games that these men are playing with these women that they don't deserve. And that's what it feels like to me. It's like, okay, you're making an Asian Annie Hall, but he's just creepy for me. And it's like, there are really great issues in this film. There's so many interesting things that are raised by this film. And I wished that there was a clearer, maybe I just wanted my hand held a little bit more in terms of like feeling like, please don't tell me that this is a movie about an incel. Please don't tell me that this is the character and this is the arc of it.
I think in general, with the Barbie movie too, I'm like, these are interesting incel vibe-ish movies. Sometimes I'm like, you know, I don't really need that in my life. But I did want to sort of pivot to Randall Park in general as a director. I am just fascinated by Randall Park's career and trajectory, where the first time I really, you know, got to know him as an actor was through Fresh Off the Boat, where he plays this dad. And I mean, being a sitcom dad is not really the most wide-ranging acting choice or role that you can have. And I'd seen him in The Interview, where he plays Kim Jong-un with Seth Rogen and James Franco. And the next one that I saw was Always Be My Maybe. And seeing Randall Park come into his own with, it is a choice to go from Always Be My Maybe to making this movie, mm-hmm. which is in a lot of ways very dark. And in a lot of ways, it is the antithesis of Crazy Rich Asians and also Fresh Off the Boat, where that movie, that TV show really nods to the idea of rep sweats, the idea of there's so few of this Asian American thing or this thing that represents my quote unquote people that I have to like it, even if it's kind of, you know, not my jam.
Wait, it's called rep sweats?
Rep sweats. Yeah, like representation sweats.
Holy, I have never heard this before. I love this. I want to use this all the time now.
Yes. So rep sweats is a term coined by Jenny Yang, the comedian.
Oh, actress. Jenny. She's great. Yeah.
And Phil Yu from Angry Asian Man, where they coined it during the time of Fresh Off the Boat, where there was just this big question of like, this isn't really my thing, maybe, but we also want to support it and we want it to win because there's this scarcity mentality. So, I mean, to my point, though, it's really interesting seeing Randall be attached to projects like that, where, I mean, there is this critique of maybe I don't like this, but I still want it to win. And then now also doing another version of it, but that's on the other side of the spectrum. I mean, it is uncomfortable in its representations of Asian Americans versus something kind of glowing and softer a la Fresh Off the Boat.
For Randall Park to sort of be like, I'm going to take control as much as I can about this narrative. And I'm going to say,
and make my own production
company. Exactly. I'm going to make my own production company. I'm going to hire my own thing. I'm going to realize this dream of 20 years of making this really difficult, oblique, elliptical novel about a difficult person. And I'm going to do that because we have to have a place where we have our voice. And that's where my rep sweats come in a little bit, where I say, I really see the value of a movie like Shortcomings, and it really makes me uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And maybe that is the value of it.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, we clearly have a lot of thoughts on this film, but this is at least a movie worth checking out and maybe arguing about with your friends.
Because, for sure.
I don't know. I found this very, very fascinating, and I loved hearing you both talk about it. And I want to know what you think about Shortcomings once you've seen it. You should definitely find us at facebook.com/PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. Kat Chow, Walter Chow, thanks so much for being here and also for introducing the term rep sweats to me, because now I'm just going to be using it everywhere.
So good. Thank you for having two chows on.
I know. What a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you.
Maybe we need another one where we have a third chow on.
There are a lot of us. That's a pretty common last name.
Let's manifest this. Let's make it happen. And we want to take a moment to thank our Pop Culture Happy Hour Plus subscribers. We appreciate you so much for showing your support of NPR. If you haven't signed up yet and want to show your support and listen to this show without any sponsor breaks, head over to plus.npr.org/happyhour or visit the link in our show notes. This episode was produced by Liz Metzger and Ramel Wood and edited by Mike Katziff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thanks so much for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Aisha Harris, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Vuori, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to Vuori.com/NPR. This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
Last year, over 20,000 people joined the Body Electric study to change their sedentary, screen-filled lives. And guess what?
We saw amazing effects.
Now you can try NPR's Body Electric Challenge yourself. Listen to updated and new episodes wherever you get your podcasts.